For doing Netivot Shalom and Parshat Shmot, our topic is Asher Lo Yada Et Yosef, the new king who did not know Yosef. This is the work of the Rebbe of Slonim, who just passed away a few years ago. Netivot Shalom. The pasuk says, "V'yakom melech hadash ha'mitzrayim asher lo yada et Yosef." A new king arose over Egypt who did not know Yosef. Ayom el amo yitzeh to his nation. Hinei yam b'nei Yisrael rav atzum mimenu. The nation, the people of Israel, are awesome. They are greater than us. Havanit chakamalo. Let's outsmart them. Pen yirbe, lest they multiply. And then at a time of war, they will turn v'nilcham banu and fight us. V'alamin out and leave the land. So they appointed people whose job it was to tax them and cause them to suffer. And so they established cities into cities of storage at Pitom and Ramses. They rebuilt the cities of Pitom and Ramses into storage cities. These pasuk are the description of the beginning of the exile into Egypt. We were in Egypt as guests until that point. And now suddenly it becomes an exile. The exile begins when there's a new king who doesn't know Yosef. So the Netivot Shalom says we can understand what's going on here in a manner that teaches us how we ourselves can serve our Creator. We know that very often when we speak about a king, we're talking about the forces within a person himself. A new king, merumaz liyetzer hara, that's a reference to the Yetzer Hara. A new king arose from within. Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is called Melech Zaken V'chsil. He's called an old king who's foolish, because the Yetzer Hara is there from the time a baby's born. All he knows is to seek for himself. So it's older, the Yetzer Hara, and it's foolish because it's always looking for the physical. And when this new king doesn't know Yosef, that's where the exile begins. We said Yosef represents the idea of the fundamental holiness that should be a part of every Jew's life. Yosef fights for that. It's the most fundamental thing, not to commit adultery. She's someone else's wife. Yosef fights for the fundamental aspect of Kedusha. But when there's this Yetzer Hara that begins within a person, that denies the basic Kedusha, the basic holiness that should be a part of every person's persona. The Holy Ari wrote that when the Hashem warns Avraham Avinu, Ki ger yeh zaracha, he was referring to that basic holiness that a person has to maintain. A person has to know that this is the fundamental source of exile. And to understand this, what is exile? Says the Netivot Shalom, exile is when a curtain is spread. There is maybe an iron curtain, but there is a boundary, there is a separation between the Jew and his father in heaven. A person lives life and suddenly he does not sense his Creator. That kirvato, he doesn't sense closeness to Hashem. Asher bechol tzaratam lo tzar. He doesn't sense this idea that if I'm suffering, so to speak, he's suffering. He cares about what's happening to me. You know, one of the kids did something that I felt I couldn't turn a blind eye. I had to react, and I had to punish the child. And I said to my wife, the child went to sleep, and I'm still aching in my heart over, I know that the child is upset. I'm upset more. I'm suffering more than the child. That's the way it is. When you care for someone, sometimes you have to do something that's not pleasant for the other party. But if you really care, so then you're suffering at least as much and sometimes more than the other party. So the idea of galut, says the Netivot Shalom, is that a person ceases to sense that closeness to Hashem. A person overlooks this idea that in essence, when a Jew is hurting, then, so to speak, in heaven they're hurting at least as much. Ki im kim ruchak, And a Jew starts feeling like he's distant from Hashem. V'nidchem imchitzato yitbarach. Person feels like, I'm not in Hashem's inner circle, so to speak. So that's galut. Galut is when a person feels like I'm alone. I'm not with Hashem. Hashem's not with me. I'm alone in this world. Ve'ageula, and the concept of redemption, inyana sheyehudi shav la'argish et Hashem yitbarach shu imo tamid. The idea of redemption is when a Jew again feels like Hashem is with him every step of the way. What causes this separation? Why is it that a person feels that separation? When we speak about a person being careful not to allow himself to spill his seed unnecessarily, so that's an issue which can really cause a separation between him and his creator. Yosef and the king of Egypt are two antithetical concepts. Yosef represents the most basic element of holiness. God forbid he should touch his master's wife. The most basic holiness. No such thing as that. How can you discuss such a thing? Egypt is the exact opposite. It's not enough that people exchange wives. Women have to sleep with women. Everything goes in Egypt. Why? Because they're looking, they're constantly seeking any form of pleasure. They're taking the exact opposite. If Yosef represents holiness, he will only be with his wife, only with his wife who is a girl from Yaakov's family who had to come down in this convoluted way to get to Egypt. And that's the only woman he's with all the years he's in Egypt. All the girls are dancing on the rooftops around him, throwing him gifts, and he could have anyone he wants. And that doesn't interest him. He has his master's wife begging him day in, day out for 10 years, threatening him she'll blind him, she'll maim him, she'll exile him, she'll kill him. Nothing scares him. That's Yosef. So when a person can connect to that most basic level of morality and holiness, that's when he could start sensing Hashem in his life. Isn't that interesting? We like to think we're doing Hashem a favor. When Yosef says no to Potiphar's wife, he's doing Hashem a favor. Look, Rabbon Shalom, I'm doing what's right. No, you're doing what's right. When you're doing what's right, then you become who you should be. And when you become who you should be, part of being who you should be is sensing that Hashem's a part of your life. It's a natural outgrowth. So Pharaoh says to his nation, this nation, the people of Israel, are much greater than us. Rav Chaim Vital writes the following. Rav Chaim Vital was the top disciple of the Ari HaKadosh. He says like this, that when the pasuk says Pharaoh turned to his nation, so that's a reference to a conversation with the forces of, call them defilement, call them the forces of evil. What does he say? The nation, Bnei Yisrael, are much greater than us. That's the idea that the strength of holiness is much greater than the strength of defilement. Hava nitzchak malo. But what happens? They say, let's outsmart him. Al yedei vayiven arei miskenot lefarot pitom etramses. What is pitom? Our sages say that's an acronym of pi tihom. What is Ramses? Our sages say that's Ra Himses. Himses is the place where a person digests food. So if a person can be detached and be confused and be focused on other things like his digestion, like other things, then a person can be overtaken. So he says, let's expand. What's he telling us here? There are two prime desires that a person has to contend with. The idea is that we have two apertures, two openings in the body that represent the two greatest desires a human being has. One is the desire for promiscuity, the other one is the desire for food. Those are two areas where a person has to deal to try and be a holier person. Will I be careful what I eat, when I eat? That's one level of holiness. Will a person be careful who he's with, when he's with? And just as we say that a person can become holy in these two areas, and then that will light up the rest of his life. If a person can be holy in what he eats and in the areas of promiscuity, it says that the Rashal said to the Shla Kadosh before his wedding, I bless you that you will be able to be careful in two things, in holiness when you eat and in holiness when you're with your wife. That was his blessing to the Shla Kadosh. And if you can succeed in those two, then you will have a shining light in everything you do. Well, it goes the other way too. If a person ruins those two areas, then it affects everything else he does. And that's what the advice was. Vayiven arei miskinot lefaro et pitom ve'et ra'amses. Galut stems from these two desires. Pitom, one aperture from promiscuity, and ra'amses, the digestion of a person, the eating of a person. So, kol yiridato sheyudi la'olam he kedei leshaber tavot elu v'lachnisan lekdusha. The purpose, why is a Jew in this world? To conquer these two desires. Can a person conquer his eating? What he will eat, when he will eat, how he will eat. I always like quoting the example. You come down to the lunchroom. Is a person's first thought, I got to get the best portion? Or is a person's first thought, how do I ensure that everyone gets what they need? And I also need to eat. How do I approach food? Kedita b'Noam Elimelech, in the Hasidic work, Noam Elimelech, he says on the Pasuk, the brothers say to Yosef, you know, we came down here to eat food. That's like a Jew saying before Hashem, I came down to this world to eat food properly. You sent me here to treat food correctly. When it comes to dealing with my desires in this world, to control them, to be balanced in them. And when we speak about food being a person's desire, so we say that both desires are called food. Notice znut and zan. Yes, that a person needs to be fed in both areas. A person has a desire and a need, and he needs to be fed in both areas. What do our sages say? When a person's married, he has pat bisalo. It's like he has bread in his basket. Meaning he can more easily overcome his desires for promiscuity because he's got bread in his basket. What is she, a loaf of bread? No, it's a humble way, it's a modest way to describe the fact that there's a certain confidence. I'm married, you know. So when a person can take control of these two desires, then he has control of all of his life. The brothers tell Yosef, when we came to the hotel, that's another way of saying we came to this world. We opened our sacks. That's another way of saying we looked into our stomachs. And we saw we had our money inside our sacks. They said we looked into our sacks and the word kesef represents kisuf. We saw our stomachs were filled with desire. So we brought it back in our hands. So bringing it back, nashu v'nashev oto, that's the idea that a person has to use the strength to do tshuva. V'chesef acher. And we have other desires. What does that mean, other desires? When a person takes control of those desires, suddenly he discovers there are other things to desire in this world. A person can desire to grow in holiness and purity. Can you imagine that? A person sits down and has a desire to daven neitz. He has a desire, not that everyone should see that he got up to neitz, or like the more sophisticated guy, he wants to hide so that people will see that he didn't want everyone to see that he should get up for neitz, right? We're all that way, right? No, but there can be a development within a person to have a desire for holiness, for purity, for that which is right, for that which is good, to grow in that. Ah, but why don't I have that? Because I'm busy with the other things. If a person conquers his desires for food and promiscuity, then suddenly there's room for a new desire. A desire. Guys, you hear that? A desire. Can you imagine? Ramban writes in Igeret HaKodesh. He says, being with one's wife is like putting on tefillin. Really? So either that tells us how the Ramban was with his wife, or it tells us how the Ramban put on tefillin. Or both. Because if you're the Ramban, then maybe there's no difference. Maybe there's a tremendous desire for tefillin, and the desire for the wife is like the desire for tefillin. Lishbor ochen. So the pasuk says about how they came to buy food, and the term to buy is lishbor. The word lishbor could also mean to conquer, to break. How do you conquer these two desires, which are called ochel? We said the desire for promiscuity and food is called ochel. That's when you invest your desire and pleasures in holiness. Can a person really enjoy holiness? As our sages said, a person's soul comes from a world of pleasure. Oh, this is a beautiful idea in the Medrash. In a nutshell, the Medrash says that our soul is accustomed to enjoying life. Why is it that people have a drive to enjoy life? Declaration of Independence, right? Everyone has the right to pursue happiness. Why? Why are we into pursuing happiness? Because it feels good? A lot of things feel good. No, our soul comes from a world of pleasure, bitter pleasure. As the mashal, I'll tell you the allegory in one sentence, even though really it's worth taking 10 minutes to tell it. But in a nutshell, the story is somehow the shepherd gets to marry the princess. And every day he brings her different gifts, and every time she looks at the gift and says, what are you giving me that for? Oats? I'm used to eating the finest bread, you're giving me oats. I'm used to wearing the finest silk, you bring me a freshly sheared piece of wool that stinks to the goat, cut to the sheep. You know, every time he brings her a gift, she looks at him, what are you doing? Right? He says, I brought something special. She says, you smell like the deer. He says, right, I'll take a shower next week, come on. She's used to bathing in the finest perfumes every day. Whatever he does, she can't be happy, right? Our sages say that's the soul. The soul comes down to the world, da nefesh lo timale, and the soul is never going to be happy. You spend your life always looking how to make your soul happy. So you get a good burger, and you get a good French fries, and you get a good Coke, and you get a good pizza, and you get a good bike ride, and you get everything great. And you walk away, and you feel something's missing. It's not it. It's not it. Yeah, my stomach's full, but it's not it. You never get to that feeling. Yeah, that's it. Never. Why? Because you're barking up the wrong tree. That's what the Medrash says. The soul comes from a world of pleasures, and it's looking for pleasures. But a person gets distracted. You know when a person senses it? When he's learning and he's learning and he's learning and he's got it. And he picks up his head from the learning and he walks away and now he feels a pleasure. But it's not the same. And you look at it and you say, I'm learning. How come you sit on a bus and you never see the guy with a newspaper looking over the shoulder of the guy with the Gemara? You never see that. Where's that desire? How come the guy with the Gemara could hold the Gemara and look at the newspaper? But the guy with the newspaper doesn't peek over at the Gemara because it doesn't have the same allure. The packaging of the newspaper gives you an allure. What does it say? The packaging of a Gemara, words, you don't see the pleasure when you look at a Gemara. It's only after you've invested sweat and tears and then suddenly, you walk away and suddenly you feel like, wow, life has meaning. I've done something here. There's pleasure in that. That's the idea our sages said. Our soul comes down from a world of pleasure. It seeks pleasure, but it doesn't find pleasure unless it goes to the world of holiness. So then the soul starts pursuing other things. Hey, where am I going to find the pleasure I'm looking for? Yeah.
Two questions on this point. First one is, if it compares the desire for food and the desire for promiscuity, and that they're both, a person has a natural need to... It's natural to fulfill them. Just like one can't survive without food, one also can't survive. At the same time, nowadays, the average person that grows up religious, at least, people from age 13, 12, start having these things. It's almost, we're getting married 23. It's 10 years, 11 years. You know, like, how is that not a cruel and unusual punishment? That's one question.
Thank you. I think the answer to that is different depending on the person. So I don't know if I can answer that in a, you know, for one person it's right to get married at 18. For another person it's right to find other ways to get around the difficulties, like you're saying, Chazal said. But once a person becomes 13, 14, so Chazal worded it as he's going to have a hard time having a day without sin. Because every day his mind is going to wander somewhere. If he's not married, so then the natural mind goes somewhere. We would call it hormones. But yeah, Chazal dealt with that question, and the ideal solution would be that a person should get married younger. Practically today, it's very hard to get married younger. So we have to discuss what are other solutions. But you're right. And to a certain degree, Chazal wanted us to marry young. Today, people don't mature young enough. People can't support a family young enough. People can't develop a deep emotional relationship when they're so young. We would not recommend anyone get married at 13, right? Okay. Don't forget, if the average lifespan was 30, you matured very fast. If one out of two babies lived, or one out of three babies lived, people matured. Life was different.
But even if someone gets married at 18 today, it's still 6 years, 5 years.
So I think each person has to speak to whoever they speak to figure out how to deal with it. You're right. It is hard.
Second question. I've read a few different things where it sort of talks about this very spiritual experience going away from learning, and like it describes as the ultimate experience in a certain way. Was this not necessarily learning or davening or something?
I'm not sure it's limited. I'm not sure that what we're learning about here is limited to one form of sensing it. I can describe one form, but I'm not sure it's limited to one form. So that's why I'm a little bit hesitant. Could be both. Could be different for different people, different at different times, and different venues for different types of learning, even for the same person. Just one second.